You're listening to Face Off, Episode 3, recorded January 31st, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, a technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
Mark Sanborn.
And today we'll be talking about some technology that hopefully is important to everybody, but really is what we care about because that's how we roll. What we got on the show today, Mark?
We've got some corrections. Firebug actually has an inspect button.
Mm-hmm.
Last show we talked about Firebug, and what I used to do is I'd go in. Well, we'll talk about it when we get there. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
Yes, you are.
We've got digital TV info. Mm-hmm. We've got a correction on the Grand Central.
Mm-hmm.
Or an update, I guess, not a correction. We've got some information about the new hard drive specifications.
Mm-hmm.
And some web apps. We're going to be talking about Mint, Ping.fm, Billing Boss.
I like that.
That's pretty much it.
All right. So let's get into this errata. All right. Grand Central is not dead. This is really not errata. We weren't wrong on this, but almost literally 2 days after we record the show, there was an article about this.
On Lifehacker,
yeah. And it was really funny. It was basically saying that it was the Grand Central people letting everybody know that they're not dead.
Which is awesome because, like I said in the last podcast, that this is just awesome.
Yeah.
An awesome service.
So if they didn't catch the last podcast, Mark, what is Grand Central and why should I care about it?
Basically, it's like a phone number proxy, you know, one phone number to rule them all, as Lifehacker puts it. You give out your phone number to your friends, or you can give the same phone number, I guess, to your friends as you do to like telemarketers or whatever. And if they are your friends, you can have it route to certain phones. You can rest assured. I mean, you can put your phone number in a newspaper ad or whatever, and not worried about somebody getting it. And
so basically, it's like a virtual phone number that the back end gives you the control to do what you want with it.
Yeah, and you can set up cool things like ring announcements for certain individuals based on their phone number the incoming phone number. You have voicemail automatically set up that you could have email to you, or you could set up certain parameters. So it's like your own. Mm-hmm. You control the phone service.
Okay. So I mean, what's been happening with this? Why?
I signed up to the beta about 2 years ago, and I'm still not in it. But it looks like they're coming back to life, and they're going to have a new version. And usually, when they do that, they allow more. The beta, they let more people in the beta. If not, maybe they'll release it to the public. I don't know.
Well, it was scary. I mean, a lot of people thought this was dead because Google started actually cutting projects. I mean, that's how you know that you're in a recession, when Google starts cutting stuff.
Right.
Right?
And the other thing with Grand Central is that it's something that I think is so awesome, mm-hmm, that I would be willing to pay for it. So yeah, I think they've got it. I think they'll succeed if they release it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the monetization possibilities are, well, I mean, not possibilities, but the monetization sort of plan is clear.
Yeah.
You know, because I think this is something that a lot of people pay for.
And right now, people that are in it are saying, oh, it's awesome. And I feel left out because I don't have it.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think it is an awesome service. I haven't actually tried it, but
mm-hmm,
the features is something that I would be interested in. So.
All right.
So it's not dead, like we were thinking. A day after our podcast, or 2 days or so, they released an article saying that it's still alive. So
good. Thank Google.
The next thing we've got is the digital TV article. What's going on with this one?
Oh, okay. So,
well, first of all, what's the whole shift?
The whole shubub, yeah, as it would. So. Basically, analog TV's been around for a long time, right?
It's like the rabbit ears.
Yeah, rabbit ears, you know, picking up pretty much. There's, you know, a couple big players. Tends to be CBS, ABC, NBC, PBS, and Fox had some penetration, and you know. But it took up a lot of, like, the digital, or not the digital, you know, the airwave spectrum technique, you know,
okay.
Because analog stuff does. So do you remember back when cell phones, I think this is a good analogy for people. Do you remember when cell phones were like analog only?
Mm-hmm.
And like basically you call people and
you get static and
yeah, it'd be like, say, Mark, what's going on? So I'm, you know,
right.
And then all of a sudden digital phones started coming out. Mm-hmm. And it just, it gives you a much clearer, you know, call. But the big problem is analog reaches farther. I mean, as you get farther away, your call quality is absolute crap, but you mm-hmm. can still get reception. They're doing the similar thing with television now. They're switching from analog to digital. But the problem is uneducated consumers. It's a big problem. And they're not doing, see, for with digital, with cell phones for a while, there's kind of like this transition period where cell phones came out that were digital and analog. Then also you start seeing digital only phones, you know. This is a cutoff. It's supposed to be February 14th, I believe, or February, sometime in February. I can't remember the official date, but it's supposed to be cut off. Boom. No analog TV. Done. And so to watch TV, for people who have televisions that only do analog, you have to get a digital TV converter.
And I think there's some misconception in there, too. People don't actually know what's kind of going on. Some people are like, do I have to have an LCD TV? You know, they're thinking...
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, oh, I have to go buy a new TV to watch TV. No. So if you get this converter, you're okay. But
like my brother was thinking that you had to have either cable or satellite or there was nothing.
There's no, yeah, because they kind of talk about
it. It's not actually the case.
Yeah, exactly. So so the government, it was subsidizing the purchase of these converters through a coupon program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was great because you got $40 off a converter, and the cheap bottom line converters on the market right now are about $40. So great, right? You can get a cheap converter. You can still watch TV. That's great. Well, the program ran out of money. So there's no more coupons going out for converter boxes. Ugh. So right now it passed the Senate, but the House rejected it. It was an extension of the analog TV switch. So instead of February, they were thinking a couple more months.
What do you remember? What it was, February 28th or?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I could look it up, but that would just make me not talk.
So it was somewhere in February.
Yeah, it was mid-February. And basically, all these consumers were saying, "Well, I don't have a coupon and I don't have a converter, and you're going to cut off television." And I mean, normally that wouldn't matter, except for, you know, this sort of, the airwaves are public property, and people were pretty ticked off about it. So I don't know what the solution is. People were saying that this program was horribly underfunded to start with. I don't know. I mean, for a while there, it's not like digital TV is a new thing, right? But it seemed to be no incentive for broadcasters to go digital. It seems like there should have been that for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like some incentive for broadcasters to go digital so that they would try and focus on that instead of just saying like, well, come February, you can only broadcast in this, and if you don't, you're going to get fined.
Do you know what they're doing with the space that they're going to free up? Because wasn't there a big auction?
I believe they auctioned it off.
And I believe it didn't go with for Verizon.
I think Verizon got a large chunk of it.
But it went... the bid for the auction was so high that they had to allow other – they had to keep it open. The winner of the auction had to keep it open is what I remember.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
So it's because Google was in there. They were trying to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there was a flurry of speculation going on around this auction time was Google's going to create internet, free internet for everybody, right. Free mesh everywhere. And so, I mean, I don't know. But
– okay.
I don't know. All I hope is that – I mean, really, what we need to do is people – some of us who are more technically inclined, is try and help some of those people that have no clue. I mean, like your brother and your brothers. I mean, the joke is kind of the old grandma who has no clue what's going on. But
yeah,
I mean, even your brother, who's a young guy, just was kind of like, well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Well, he was just thinking that if you didn't have cable or satellite, you're done.
Yeah, which is not the case at all. No. So try and educate your fellow humans that don't understand. I think the government kind of knobbed it. I don't know. I'm kind of in a weird place because I think, I mean, I hate the sort of bureaucratic red tape of like saying like, well, we'll broadcast digital and analog for a while. You know, I like the idea of a cutoff date that sticks. You know, I mean, they're extending it now. I'm like, but at the same time, if it's not done right, it's like, well, they really screwed that up. And these people are out on their butts with, I mean, well, no television. I guess that's not the worst thing in the world.
And the announcement, what, it's been over like a year or two.
Yeah.
It was like last Christmas, I remember.
Yep. Yeah. They've been pumping it out for a while. So, I don't know. All right. So this one, this has to do, Mark already kind of touched on this a little bit. He got a little excited, but apparently I was wrong. And Firebug's inspect button will actually take you to the code. Now, I want to clarify this, Mark, because I knew about the inspect button and I used it. And I knew that when I clicked on it, it brought up the relevant thing that you clicked on CSS in the side. But when I did it, I would almost swear on my life that it did not take you to that part in the code.
In the HTML.
In the HTML code.
Okay,
and I was just proved wrong because he just showed it to me, and I'll be damned, it sends you to you, it sends it to you in the code.
All right, I just learned about the inspect button when I was messing around with Firebug just after our show. And prior to that, I was using the search function on the side. I'd see something on the page that I wanted to check out, and the nearest text that I saw, I would, you know, search for that. And then I was like, "What's inspect?" You know, click on it and click it, and sure enough, it went right to it. So.
Wow. Well,
so there you go.
I feel like a monkey's uncle. You got me on that one.
And well, I didn't know about it on the show. Otherwise, I would have said something. I know,
but mark it on your calendar, right? Because I'm not wrong often.
But it's great because I mean, it's a trick, you know, to speed things up. Maybe this is something that's been going on forever. I don't.
Oh no, I mean, I don't know how many times I will highlight something in Firefox, right click and hit view selected source. And that's just so much more inefficient than this because then I can just click on it and it'll pop it up in Firebug. I use that a lot, actually. I view selected source and it seems cumbersome.
Yeah. And for the people that use Firebug a lot, maybe this is not a new tip or anything. for us, like we're first discovering
this. There's some hardcore users out there that are like, yeah, who are these retards, you know? But anyways, but Firebug, great tool. Great tool for web development. Along with the web developer's toolbar, I don't think you can go wrong with those two. I think those are, you know, especially if you're developing in Firefox, we won't even talk about developing in Internet Explorer.
Well, especially if you're doing JavaScript stuff because, you know, JavaScript isn't going to show up in the view source, the updated JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you know, like true.
The DOM.
All the, yep. So, all with all the inputted scripts and everything too, huh?
Whereas if you're doing JavaScript and you got Firebug open, when you click on JavaScript and the action's being taken, it'll actually update the HTML as you see it.
So, yeah, yeah. And with Firebug, you can see.
So if you're doing any kind of JavaScript, it's like, you know.
With much. Ajax, it can show you the HTTP calls.
Yeah.
Which you cannot see at all.
Right.
In anything else. Very useful, very useful.
And the post variables and things like that. Mm-hmm. You can see those as they go across.
So no more echoing $_get, $_post, or print r.
That's what it is. Or doing some kind of a JavaScript alert or something. You don't really need to. And it's also got the console where you can actually output to the console.
Mm-hmm.
The Firebug console.
Yeah. Oh my! I have some errata to talk about. I don't know if we talked about this. This is on the fly, so bear with me.
Okay.
Did I talk about the console in Rails?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So this is one of the things that we need to talk about. I really wish I would have brought this up when we were talking last week. One of the coolest features of Rails is that you can bring up a console for your Rails project. So there's like, you know, PHP command line tools that you can just run PHP, you know, from your command line. No big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same with Ruby. You can run, it's called IRB, and pull it up and just run Ruby console like it's Ruby, the Ruby language like it's a console thing, right? Well, in Rails, you call the script /console command, and it brings up an IRB console, but it has all your Rails objects and stuff in it.
Okay.
So all your models, all your helpers, everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like running IRB in your Rails project.
Huh.
So all my model stuff, like you can say user.find1, you know, and user is a model that's mapped to the database.
You can try that stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
You can actually put it in the code.
Yeah. I was working with this this guy named Paul Lovett at work. And I was like, well, I need to get rid of all these users in this Rails project. And he was like, okay, well, I'll help you do that because I want to make sure I didn't break it. So I was like, okay. So I was like, oh man, now I got to install PHP MyAdmin on it so I can get to MySQL, you know? And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, he's like, we're using Rails, dog. I'm like, what?
Got to do the Rails way.
So he pulls up the console and it's like, you know, user.find, you know, and he puts the parameters in Rails like you would in your Rails code and then tells it to delete it all like in Rails code. I mean, it's so handy, right? Because let's say you had a PHP project. You pull up the PHP command line, right?
Right.
There's a PHP CLI, command line interface. You have to do all your MySQL connect stuff, all that junk, right?
I wouldn't do it that way. I would just go to PHP MyAdmin. And...
Yeah, well, no. But
no, I'm, no, but... I mean, that's why it's so... Because PHP doesn't really have the stuff that you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I know, yeah.
That's the reason why I would do that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
So that's
you get all the benefits of your framework just as you would, you know, your benefits of the framework that you get in the code you program as well in a command line interface.
That sounds like an awesome feature. So that's cool.
Amazingly cool.
And everything Ruby's an object and stuff. Like you talk about all the objects.
Yeah, like I was debugging a mail importing program for the Redmine project. And like I pull up the command line and I go, I issue the command that I would in my code to run, you know, I run the method, and it, you know, it shows everything. So
for example, if you had a lot of test data you want to try out, you want to put dummy data in, maybe it's a name, address, city, state, whatever. You wouldn't have to go through the web form, open up a browser, and do all that. You could do it right in there.
Yeah.
So it's
and it's all
test your model.
Exactly. Model. It's just like you were doing things. In your Rails code, but you're just doing it at the command line. I mean, it does all your models, all your helpers, everything for you, and it's very cool.
And you SSH into that, or can you, or what do you do?
Well, another really cool thing about Rails, what you find is it comes with a web server on it. You don't really have to develop remotely. I mean, I of course would suggest that you recommend the USBN it, you know, for backup purposes and stuff, but I don't have to have like a LAMP server that I have to put my Rails project on to check it out. I can just do /script/server. Wow, brain fart. And it'll fire up a Mongrel server that will run my Rails project in port 3000. I haven't even begun to touch on it. I'm telling you. I think when you learn the power,
I'm going to try it out. I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing, you know, there's no downside to learning new things. So I might try and say I hate it, but I learned maybe there's 1%, something like that. Like you're talking about the object thing, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can take that and use the same philosophy somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, it was so cool the fact that I deleted all those users and I didn't even have to touch a bit of SQL. Yeah. And I mean, I love SQL, MySQL, don't get me wrong, but
I always forget the syntax and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm always looking.
I mean, I didn't have to at all. It was the same code as my project. I didn't have to like, you know, code it in a thing and then save it and then run it, you know, it's with command line, pop it.
It's like the HTML document doc type. I don't memorize any of that stuff.
No, who does?
That's
Mark.
That's cool.
So tell me about hard drives will be fully encrypted soon. What's up with that?
Okay, so a lot of people are using like products like TrueCrypt.
Yeah, I'm honestly thinking about TrueCrypting my laptop right now,
just in case you know your laptop gets stolen and you have sensitive data on it. You have full drive encryption. Here's the other thing too is like we all know Windows passwords can be cracked like within minutes.
Oh yeah,
like so that's not.
I mean, security. It's not even an effort.
That's not security. So if you're thinking you've got a laptop and you lose it and you're thinking, oh, it's okay. I have a BIOS password and I have, a Windows password and you're not secure.
No,
they can go into, they can boot into a Live CD Linux and, mount the drive as NTFS and get to all your data. If you encrypt it, however, and they don't have the key to decrypt it and it's ran from the beginning, there is no way for them to see what your data is no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that encryption nowadays encryption is pretty good. Like it's not like a Windows password that can be cracked. The RSA standard encryption is pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have a supercomputer and then you'd have to spend days, trying to decrypt it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not really feasible. So it's actually pretty good. What they're doing here with the hard drives is they're actually building in. Okay. So TrueCrypt is software that runs, it runs and it may have some, you know, it's got some processing time, CPU time, because it has to decrypt on the fly as you're running. If you're doing full drive encryption, they've done a really good job at it, and it's not super I mean, you probably wouldn't notice it at all unless you're, you know, gaming or something.
Yeah, exactly.
What this does though is it's pretty much it's built into the hard drive.
So it's hardware-based drive encryption.
So it's going to be way faster. So, you could game or what.
Yeah, I mean, according to your computer, your hardware, your computer itself, your operating system, it sees no difference.
Right.
It's just accessing the hard drive like normal.
Yeah, and the beauty of this, I guess, is that all the hard drive manufacturers have now agreed on it, and so it's going to be something
going
to be in the next,
awesome. Next
sets of hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the criticism, though, is, you know, who's got the back key, the backdoor key, you know?
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
Always.
What is this encryption?
Yeah.
Whereas TrueCrypt is they've got the standard art, you know, that's been published. And as far as we know, no one's been able to.
Is TrueCrypt open source?
Yes. Or
it is? Okay. Good. I love that.
And they release their encryption methods, too.
Oh, really?
How they do, yeah. So if you you can check them out for yourself. I don't know enough about encryption to, you know, go say, oh, that's not good or whatever.
Well, yeah, but there's enough people out there like Steve Gibson that will for you, right?
Yep.
Steve Gibson, he knows security now.
It's a great podcast. I'm sure the specification for the hard drive is probably released, but I'm not sure what type they're using.
Well, and the thing is, it kind of, I don't know, it's hardware level, but what I'm curious of is how it, I know if one computer can decrypt it, how does another computer know to decrypt it? I mean, you know what I'm saying? How does that work? Does it like bring up like a hardware based login at the beginning that's like input your password?
That's a good question. Maybe you have to have a certain BIOS that supports this type of hard drive.
I mean, yeah, right. I mean, how does it know that you're how does it know that where is it deriving the key to decrypt the data? Is it like a hand inputted one? Is it, you know, I mean, does this literally just protect you from taking the platters out and getting data, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think the actual data on the drive is encrypted.
Well,
meaning,
I know,
like if they took the drive apart and looked at the, you know, little bits on the Mac, you know,
but how is it decrypted, right? If it's encrypted just on the platters, but it doesn't matter what computer you plug it into, it'll decrypt it for you. That does you no good. Mm. You need to know how. I mean, I'm curious to see how you input the key to decrypt it.
The key.
Is it based on gathering other hardware information? Well, that does you no good because then someone could just get on your computer and do it. Is it a prompt at the beginning when you boot up?
Yeah, that's okay. If that's the case, somebody could have a weak password. And it could be brute forced or maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It'd be curious to see. I would love to get one when they come out and see how it works.
I mean, I doubt it's like a USB key that you plug in and have your data stored in there.
Yeah, I don't know. Curious. I'm curious to see how they do it because this stuff's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hopefully you can turn it off if it is corrupt in the future. Like if it comes out and they find out the encryption is just total, you know, it's slow and hopefully that's the thing. I mean, that's the bad thing about new specifications, I guess, is sometimes they just.
Yeah. Well, or let's say, I mean, another issue of it being hard drive or hardware based level is. Is it hardware, but really software? Is it just in the device firmware? Right. So, then it's like, is that firmware updatable? What if they find a giant vulnerability in it and the company didn't prepare for you to be able to flash your hard drive? And all of a sudden, you know, it's like the whole, what was the
false security
the whole SSL debacle at Debian, you know, I mean, just, lots of problems.
And it's saying right here in the article that there is no slowdown. So
that's good.
I don't know how they accomplish that. But.
Well, it's all hardware based, right? I mean, your hard drive would just know.
Yeah, I guess.
It's just inherently, all it's doing is looking, taking the data and probably, I mean, it probably just has to combine it before, I don't know. Anyways, let's talk about some web apps. Let's get out of this hardware land. I'm tired of all these green circuit boards and hard drive platters and stuff.
All right.
So
what do you want? Which one do you want to go? Mint first?
Well, since you just said it, why right, not? Let's
Mint,
do
here
it.
Here we go. You know more about Mint. I'm a new user.
Okay.
I've tried it.
So I'm going to tell you about Mint. Mint.com. Mint is a program that takes sort of all your various financial information that's out on the internet, you know, your online banking, your online credit card, your online investing, and combines them into one web application for you to keep track of all your finances. What it is not Quicken. It is not QuickBooks.
Okay.
What it is for if you don't have Quicken or QuickBooks, it's a quick way to get a rundown of your spending and where your money is at.
So when you say, how does it get this information?
It gets it because you tell it where to go and how to do it. So let's say I'm going to log into Mint, right? Okay. I'm going to put in my username here and then I'm going to put in my password. So let's say, okay, what do? iOnline Bank, right? Say like US Bank, just pick
pretty
a bank.
Pretty much all the banks now are online.
Yeah, oh yeah. If you don't have a bank.
You don't have to go online, but they have an online service.
If you're not using your banking online, then you should not be listening to this podcast right now.
Oh yeah.
Because that would be silly. So I go on, let's say I open a new savings account at Bank of America, right?
Okay.
And I go to bankofamerica.com, whatever, log in, I can see all my stuff, right? Then it's like, okay, well, now I want to go see my credit card, right? So I go to like my credit card's website and I log in, right? Well, in Mint, you do that in the application. So you say, oh, add a new account. What kind of account are you adding? I'm adding a US Bank savings account. Okay. It knows because obviously US Bank, right? Big bank, right? It goes, okay, what's your US Bank username and password? Now, I know this is going to scare some people. This is going to freak them out.
That was going to be my next question. So keep going.
So you put in your US Bank username and password, and it logs into US Bank just like you would log in, but grabs all your information for you and pulls it into Mint.
Okay.
Right? So same thing, right? I go to Mint and I say, okay, I have a Chase credit card, right? It says, okay, I know Chase's website. What's your username and password for Chase's website? You put it in. It goes out and grabs all your stuff. It aggregates it all so that, you know, like I can log in. I can see how much cash I have, as in, you know, cash, my checking account, savings account. I can see how much my credit card debt is for all my different credit card accounts. I can see my loans. There's, you know, if your bank has loans that you can log in and pay and get information for, and investments, all in one spot. And it gives you just a good quick overview when you first log in. It's like, this is how much cash you have. This is how much credit cards you have, loans, investments. And then it tells you your net worth, which for me right now is not nice. No, it's kind of disturbing. it's scary.
So is this something that would be good for somebody that wants to know what they're spending their money on?
Oh, yeah. That's the whole point, right? Okay. A lot of people really, all they use like Quicken for, I mean, they're not using advanced features of it, right? They put in their transactions, and then they go in and it's like, okay, you've spent $300 this month on fast food. And you're like, all right, I'm fat and not cool. That's all this does for you. And you don't need the advanced features of that software. And it's all online based. It's all online, right? So I can go.
And you don't have to log into 10 different websites.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a bonus, right? So like here, I can click, you know, transactions. I'm looking at my transactions. It's got my transactions from my credit card and my checking account consolidated into one thing, right?
That's nice.
Yeah. Because, I mean, and then it's smart enough, like when I pay my credit card, it notices that, you know, money came out of my checking account and then I have a transaction for the same amount in my credit card account. So it's like, oh, that's a transfer. All right. But like still, I mean, just because I spend money on my credit card for fast food, that's still money on fast food that I need to track, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess this is a question probably going through people's mind that they're just now hearing about it. And it was on my mind when you were telling me about it. How secure is it?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, obviously they can't – if they've had – I mean, it's an added risk, I guess, because somebody else has your information, as Steve Gibson or somebody would say.
Yeah.
But, right. I mean, this is their whole business model. If they ever have an attack or something –
oh, the second
they would be
the second anything happens on this, they will have no customers whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right. And again, this is something we touched on last time. The only one that we're kind of scared of is investment accounts. I think actually we talked about this on our first podcast. Mm-hmm. But oh no, actually we didn't. But here's the question. If I give you my banking account information, what horrible damage can you do?
Probably not much because it's all.
The worst you can. Trails.
You can't transfer money out unless it goes somewhere.
So. Exactly right. I mean, you can transfer money from my savings account to my checking account and maybe make me get an overdraft fee. That's fine.
You could try. I guess you could go to the bank and pretend you're Jade or whatever and try to withdraw money.
You have to have a photo ID.
Right.
If your bank doesn't take, you know, online banking gives you. I don't. There's some things that you can do. Okay, but either way,
it's not too easy, and it's a it's. A felony.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that the average person's going to try to steal.
I'm not sure what damage a person can do. I feel like Mint is the risk is worth for its usefulness for me.
Okay. So it's probably pretty secure. I mean, it's their business. If it's not secure, they're going to be out of business fast.
Yeah. I mean, like they have like one of those specially signed certs that gives you the green bar up the top. I mean, they're
expensive too. I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, they're security minded people. And they have to be. Like we said, if one thing happens, they're gone.
Do you think I'd have to be worried about updates? Like, let's say Wells Fargo or Bank of America changes their layout of the website. Because basically it's just a grabber, right? It logs in.
I think it's smarter than that. I think what we've found with a lot of these companies is they all use – I think there's only like five companies that do this sort of enterprise-level bank online management.
Okay.
And so they're all pretty much the same. I don't know. I've never.
Maybe it has detection like this website's changed drastically. Like, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to get the information.
Yeah.
If it can't find its way through, let's say it's obviously a robot. It's a getter. It's some kind of a script going to the website. If something's changed, it's not going to break anything. It's not going to like accidentally move money or whatever.
Yeah. It just scrapes it. Scrapes information. And a lot of banks have, I don't know the protocol about it, but, you can import your stuff into Quicken too. There has to be some kind of standard protocol. I don't know if it's like RSS or something, like XML, some kind of format that allows you to export and it just grabs that, same thing. People ask like, what about Quicken? And the beauty about Mint is what they do, to make money is look at your financial information and give you offers that help you out, right? So they can look at my credit card and say, wow, Jade Robbins is just getting, screwed over at 24% interest, right?
So this is how they monetize.
And so they say, oh, well, guess this company told us about a new offer for, 8% credit card. Why don't you sign up? The best part about this business model is it's good for both the consumer and the company, right?
Win-win, right?
Exactly. I mean, if I get a credit card with less interest, hell yeah. I mean, that's good, right? Or a savings account with more interest, that's awesome. I think where it really comes out, and I don't have any investment accounts on there, I think it really shines with your investment accounts. I think that's when they really start getting offers to give to you.
I noticed on mine it wanted me to do a credit rating because it bases all the offers off that.
Really?
And before I got my PayPal account, we've talked personally about the PayPal thing where you can actually have generated credit cards, virtual credit cards that expire tomorrow or whatever, or you can cancel it right now, this minute.
Yeah.
What happened to me was I went to freecreditreport.com, I signed up and I forgot, I didn't read the fine print, blah, blah, blah. I was going through and I was like, free thing. They just want my credit card to verify that's me, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden I started getting bills from Credit Report and they started giving me updates on my credit, which was nice, but the way they did it, I didn't like their business model. I thought it was kind of shady that they're just going to charge. And they told me, but they didn't at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was fine print stuff. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not advertised. They didn't email saying, "Hey, this is a subscription service or anything like that."
Yep.
With the PayPal thing, it's nice. I guess you could go in there and say, "This is my fake credit card, or not fake. I don't want to call it that. It's a virtual credit card,
temporary."
That I could say, "Okay, here's my credit card for your free service, and now I'm going to cancel it right now."
Yeah.
So I really truly have a risk free thing. Mm-hmm. The reason I mentioned it was that they on Mint, they say you need to get a free credit report and it has freecreditreport.com's deal on there. But I guess anybody listening and they want to get a free credit report and they don't want to have the risk, I would say go to PayPal and use this thing called the PayPal plugin, and you can set up a virtual credit card and you can have a really risk-free way of doing it.
Well, while we're on the topic, the three major credit reporting companies are obligated by law to give you one free credit report a year.
So one of each.
Yes. And you know where you go to get that? Search for I think it's annualcreditreport.com.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, and this is free. It's mandated by the government. You don't even put a credit card information in it. See, companies like freecreditreport.com and what's another? There's no one on TV right now. They prey, and in some instances, they can even hurt your credit, because if they're not a valid company looking into your credit, it looks like an inquiry on your credit. Mm. So be careful and use annual credit report. It's a government mandated once a year. But that's the thing. With like free credit report, you can get your credit report anytime. This is once a year, you know.
Well, free credit report, they're saying they give it to you for free. And it's a once a year thing, like you're talking about. But then they get you into the subscription thing by making you put your credit card in.
Yeah, and it can hurt. It potentially hurts your credit.
I see.
And on it looks like an out when you're so like if you go to Experian's website and you say, "Give me my credit report," that's the company who is generating the credit report, getting your credit report. So it doesn't look bad at all, right? They just grab it for you. When an outside company says, "Hey, I need Jade Robbins' credit report," that looks like an inquiry on my credit report and could potentially hurt it. Like if you get, 1,000 inquiries at once,
yeah,
it looks bad. So annual credit report, and make sure you get it for free from the government. You don't pay any money. You don't have to give a credit card company and check your credit report.
Right.
Because God forbid, you're using something like Mint. Someone hacks into it. You need to look at these things and catch them. Uh-huh. And it's tough. It's tough.
And if you do use any kind of service that you want to actually truly try out for free, risk-free, use this virtual credit card by PayPal.
PayPal.
As far as I know, they're the only ones offering that service.
Yeah,
there might be some banks, somebody might have it, but as far as I know, they don't.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything, but that's cool.
So that's nice.
It's so handy, though. It's like...
back to the reason why I brought it up is Mint pretty much wants a credit report before it is going to start giving you offers.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Like I said, what offers you got for me? I clicked it and they said, in order to get you, an accurate set of offers, we need the credit.
That's score. A good. I have to take a look at that. That's because that is shady. I don't like that.
Yeah. Just be careful with freecreditreport.com.
See, that's funny because mine does not say that. Currently, they have no offers for me, but they say, to get more offers, try and categorize more of your transactions, add another bank or credit card, see how it rates against the best cards out there.
Have you put in your credit report on there? Or your credit rating?
Nope. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, Mint, I think it's a great service. I think, especially in America, it seems like money management is a secondary thing for most people. It's like it's not something you spend time doing, and you really need to spend time. Living is not free, living life, right? So keeping track of your money and your finances is important. So make sure it's a job that you sit down and do it, and a thing like Mint can really help you out.
All right, so I just clicked on ways to save on there, and it popped up JavaScript pop-up, and it's saying we need to get your credit score from either freecreditreport.com or creditreport.com.
Hmm.
Or you can just tell if you know it. You can just
click. Oh, I think that's what I did.
Save, and I'm just reading here now. It says that freecreditreport.com will start charging $12.95 there the month after.
Yeah.
So they're saying it right out.
Good. Mint. I've been following them. They also have like a personal finance blog, which is really helpful. It seems like a cool young company that wants to do good things. It's not like one of those shady, seems like evil, sort of things. And I was in it when it was beta. You want to talk about scary, letting some company that has software in beta connect to all your financial information.
Yeah.
But looking at them, they seem like a good company. And I think they'll do good things. I really do. I wish I could have thought of an idea like this and turned it into a company, because I think it's going to be a mine, a gold mine.
Do you think they'll have any resistance from banks and other, that want their customers to go to the actual bank instead of this?
I think
they'll have any resistance. Maybe the bank trying to block them out, or
I really could see that.
Could see that.
If anything, if you want to get, sort of tinfoil hat-ish, right? These companies don't want them, you know. I don't know. Actually, that's a good question.
Because I've, as a bit,
like, I was a credit card company doesn't want you to know, doesn't want something like Mint to say, like, hey, this other credit card has better interest. So I could see, like, them putting pressure on it more than the banks.
That, and some of these institutions actually advertise their own other programs, like, yeah, invest in our trading program, yeah, or do this other thing, or get mortgages from our bank. So they want their customers to go to their site.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about making, like, a service that went to Facebook, MySpace, all the different ones, update it, and then come back with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, because there is nothing.
All their ad revenue is people going to their site, mm-hmm, not my site that I would make. So, you know, I would see, maybe there's some resistance.
Well, that's why, like, Twitter limits your API grabs, right? Yeah. Even though they have no monetization right now at all, they try and limit your API calls. And I think that's a good business model. I mean, if you're going to start a company, you should pay to go grab that stuff, right?
Yeah, but you can make a scraper that logs into Twitter with your actual account, you know, just like Mint does, and there's no restrictions on
how. Yeah, but I mean, all they have to do is change one div tag or something like that. And you're,
well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe on this Mint, maybe the banks are going to change one div tag and screw everything up.
Well, no, that's why I think they do the export. Like, most banking websites can export to Quicken file format and Microsoft Money file format. Mm. I think that it looks for the link to that file type.
Oh,
you know,
I see.
I don't know. I think it would be stupid for a bank to get really teed off about it, because these are services that they shouldn't offer. Like, I don't want my bank to talk to my credit card company or my investment company, you know?
I see.
I want my bank to focus on being a good bank, because right now most online banks suck, you know? That's what I want out of it. Boom.
Have you tried the iPhone app for it?
Yeah.
Anybody that has any of that stuff? Does it work pretty good?
It's good. It's slick. Nice. It's nice that it's an app. You don't have to log into the web interface. It does all, like, the pretty slider graphs and stuff. Like,
cool.
All the iPod stuff does.
That's nice. I mean, Bank of America, they don't have any iPod apps.
Right? Exactly.
You know, so there's another reason to use it if you're on the road and if that's something you use. Mm-hmm. Well, is your iPod.
Yeah. The worst thing I found thus far about Mint is sometimes it does have trouble grabbing your information. But it does it gracefully, at least. It doesn't, like, poop out a big 500 error or anything like that. It's just, it's like, I can't get your information for your bank right now. I got all the rest of it, but, you know. So,
We check out ping.fm. That's the one.
Okay. Yeah. So, next one. I love this program, too. Let me tell you. I'm kind of a social whore. I mean, I don't know if that's the right word. I'm like a social freak, right? I do Twitter. I do Facebook. I do Jaiku. I did Plurk. I used to use Pounce, you know. But the problem is I didn't want to go, you know, like, if I said, hey, I'm going to go out to dinner, right? I want everybody to know that, because I have very few friends that use as many services as I do, right? Yeah. Now, if I could be sure that all of my friends, if I had, you know, friends on, all my friends on Plurk, all my friends on Facebook, all my friends on Twitter, you know, no big deal. But most of my friends are on Facebook. I have specific friends in Twitter. I have nobody in Plurk. I mean, who uses that? Yeah, that's terrible.
You're the type of guy that signs up to all the different services, like, before they're even popular with everybody
else. Well, yeah, because I want to try them, right?
Yeah, and I'm always like, what is this? What are you trying to push on me now, you know? I don't want to have to go to 20 different places to insert my updates or whatever. I just want one, you know? So this is cool, I guess.
So what ping.fm does to mitigate this problem is it sends your one update to a lot of services, okay, right?
Is it one, is that, like, can you set up, if I do, can you set up groups of services, I guess?
Yes.
Like, I want, okay.
Okay, so one other thing, I don't know if you noticed, that even Twitter is like this, and Facebook is definitely like this. It's like status updates, right? Uh-huh. Where it kind of puts your name in front. Like, I love people who screw up the Facebook one horribly, you know, where it's like, Jade is, I'll be going home to see my parents tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
That's like a status update, right? Jade is. And then there's other ones that it's considered microblogging, where it's just a small blurb of text that stands by itself talking about something. Like, not what I'm doing, but, like, if I was like, you know, what does everybody think about ping.fm? Right, that's not a status update. That's microblogging.
You can pose a question or do whatever.
Yeah, right. Well, Ping will allow you to differentiate between those. Like, I have you know, right now Facebook and Twitter as my status updates. And then I have like, or in MySpace, right? And then I have sort of like Yammer, Jaiku, and Twitter too as microblogging. So you can set it up to change what, you know, where things go when you say what, which is really useful. Because like I set one up. I mean, sometimes with my tweets and my Facebook, especially, I can be kind of unprofessional. And I'm on LinkedIn, which is sort of like this professional network of people, you know, it's like the Facebook for professionals, right? Well, you know, like I don't want to talk about getting hammered and throwing up in someone's front yard on LinkedIn, right? Because that's like my professional network. I don't want someone to be like, I'm looking for people who know something, you know, this Jade Robbins guy seems to have an impressive resume. And then it's like, Jade Robbins got really drunk last night and puked on someone's lawn.
And I would argue you wouldn't want to put that anywhere, even Facebook.
Just you would.
Because now with the internet and search capabilities.
I know. So, but at least with Facebook, I could set fine grain permissions enough that won't show up. So you shut up.
If you're careful.
If you're careful. But what I'm saying is, it allows you to send certain things to certain networks, not only just by what they are, but like what ones you personally set yourself. You know, like I have a professional tag. So when I'm saying something like, you know, managing a new project at work that involves blah, 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 like I want that to go to my professional networks as well, right? Because I want people to see that. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool. And now it does cool stuff like you can add your Flickr account. And so like if you text okay. It's got all kinds of ways to submit stuff. It's got like an iPhone web interface. It's got, you can email, you can SMS, you can do it through Gmail, you can do it through, you know, Yahoo, MSN, Gtalk, cool. IRC. Whoa, IRC. I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
I might have to check this out because it actually looks like something that I was thinking about making, except answer this, I guess. Can you view your updates from all the different services? That's something I wanted to make.
No. No, the only thing I know of right now that does that is the Flock browser. And nothing else does it. Right. And I think it's just because you have to put it on the browser level, because then it just uses all your authentication itself that you've done through the browser. Cause like, yeah, I want to log into a web service. Let's finish. Note this afterwards. But okay. Anyways, with Ping, you add all kinds of services you want. And so like if I can set up my Flickr account. So if I text Ping an image, not only it'll create a short URL, it makes all URLs short automatically, which is awesome, right? I mean, I just screwed that up when I was tweeting our broadcast. It makes all URLs short. And so like if you send it a picture, it will upload the picture to the ping.fm uploader, create a short URL for it, and send that out to all the text-based ones, and then upload it to Flickr too. It's really smart. Very cool. Now, what you're thinking of is a way to get all of your friends' updates from different services integrated into one place.
Like, I don't want to log into Facebook and Twitter. I want to see one site.
Exactly. I want to see, like, the status updates aggregate. Yeah.
And
Flock does that.
I was thinking about making something like this, and then I was like, wait a minute. There'd be so much resistance because that's how they get their ad revenue.
Exactly.
I mean, there'd be no way they would allow that.
And, like, browser level can do that, right? That's why Flock has it, the social web browser, because you can do that browser level. Just log in with my authentication and scrape it, you know, no big deal. Whereas doing that with a web application would be really cumbersome.
And even if you did, I think you'd have heavy resistance.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you started taking away all the traffic,
it wouldn't allow that. Especially if you started getting your own ad revenue, which is kind of what you're hoping to get, right?
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah. Well, you'd have all the eyeballs.
Yeah.
They'd be looking at your site and not theirs.
They would just be looking at
the information.
Yeah.
So, are there any competitor websites like this one? Because that updates all the services. So
not that I know of.
Because is NetVibes one that does that?
No, I think when people post from NetVibes, I think it's just a widget. NetVibes is like iGoogle. I think there's just a Twitter widget, and when they tweet from it, it says from NetVibes. I do not think that is NetVibes.
I see.
Brightkite maybe. But that's like an iPhone thing. That's an iPhone app thing.
And I've heard of this one, so this must be popular.
Yeah, and it has the most services of anything that I've seen.
I need to get on it. I need to start using this.
It's very cool, right? And then, so like, it's perfect for someone like you who really doesn't like Facebook that much. Like, you don't like to log into Facebook, but it's still cool to like
send a
send your tweets out, right?
Yeah, I probably would send that.
Right, exactly. And then then you can email some replies and you can actually interact then a little bit, right? Yeah. But it, I mean,
there was a picture of me posting on Facebook just recently, and I got an email for every single person that said something on it. Just tagged as my name.
Yeah. What you get for being a social butterfly, Mark.
I know.
You are just all over the place.
I don't know about it's something about Facebook, but
neither you just here don't like it. There. I like it.
Anything else about this one?
No. Bing.fm is great. I think everybody should sign up for it. I think it's out of beta now. Or if it's at least in beta, it was closed beta for a while, but now it's opened up, I think.
Okay, so some of us do some freelance work. What is this? I guess this Billing Boss is something for that.
Okay. Yeah. So let's move on to Billing Boss.
You're going to have to do this one as well because I'm not too familiar.
You're not privy.
I do know what it is, and I've checked it out, but I have not used it like you have.
So. You need to get privy to this stuff because it's good
stuff.
And
like I said to the listeners earlier, is you're the one that usually tries out all these new services before.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm
a little bit resistant to new things like this.
Yeah. Well, you know,
even Ping.fm, it's been around for a while, right?
Yeah.
And I, haven't tried it.
Well, you should, though. You really need to check this stuff out, especially if you want to be like a, a little entrepreneur like you like to talk about. You got to know what's out there, right?
Yeah, this looks good.
Okay. Actually, if you are a young entrepreneur, something like this is great. Billing Boss is an online invoicing system, which is great. For those of us that don't want to pay money for a really big QuickBooks software package, right? Just to send an invoice. So here's what you do. You go to Billing Boss. You log in, right? And let's say I just did work for Mark Sanborn, right? And I need to let him know that he owes me some money. Okay. So I log into Billing Boss. I say, hey, I'm going to make a new invoice. It has all my past invoices in there because I've done them all on Billing Boss, right? And I say, new customer, Mark Sanborn, here's his address. What did I do? I did one unit of, web design at $50 a unit, right? Mm-hmm. And then I did one unit of, website security auditing for $50 a unit, okay? And then I say, all right, how do I want to send this invoice? I can either print it off, put it in the mail, or when I actually send the invoice, it can just email you a link to the invoice. Hmm. So you go on your website or you get an email.
So it makes it easier for the guy.
Right. Paperless, right? I mean, it saves money because you don't have to, you don't have to print everything off and mail it through the mail. So you do this.
They mail it for you?
No. Oh, no. Okay. You got to print it off and mail it.
Okay.
Or email it, right? But you can email it and then it saves you money, right? Because you don't have to do it. So you get an email like, Jade Robbins has just, or Jade Robbins Incorporated has just invoiced you. Here's a link to get your invoice. You click on it, brings it up. Okay. You write me a check for the $100 you owe me, send it to me in the mail. It just looks just like an invoice. It's got, my name at the top, what I'm charging you, invoice number, everything, right?
And it keeps track of all the numbers and things so you could do backtrack logs and things.
Yep, it does all that. Or let's say you just say, I'm going to send you $50 on this invoice and I'll send $50 next month. Right? You send me $50. I go on to Billing Boss. I say, oh, Mark Sanborn. Oh, this is, because hopefully if you're a good businessman in the memo field, you put, invoice number 692. So I know which invoice you're mailing a check about, right? And I go to invoice 642 and I say, oh, Mark has paid $50 on the invoice. And it's like, okay, well, he still owes $50 on this invoice, right? So let's say, 2 months goes by. Well, gosh dang, Mark Sanborn still hasn't sent me that $50 he owes me for web, that security audit. I can go on and resend the invoice via email so that you get a link and you go to, oh, God, I forgot to pay Jade that other $50 on the invoice. Send me a check. And then I go on that, say, oh, that invoice, Mark has paid it. And it keeps track. What's nice is it keeps track of all your invoices through a web interface.
So is it a free service?
Yeah.
So then how do they monetize?
Yeah. You want to know?
Yeah.
This is a free service that is given away by a company that does online payment processing.
Okay.
I can't remember the name. I really should advertise for them because I feel good. But it integrates really well with their service, but you don't have to, right? So, I mean, it's great. Like I could send an invoice out with a link to pay online through their service.
Okay. So they can send, they can do a debit card, credit card.
Yep.
Wire transfer or whatever.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And so they monetize by saying like, hey, you want to make getting this money from these people easier? Sign up for our little online.
And if they don't do that and they send a check to you, do you have to then go to the website and say that they paid it?
Yeah. I mean, that's just like any other invoicing software though, you know.
They have the option to manually send you a check or.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's say if I signed up for their payment service, the invoice would say, you know, mail Jade a check or click here to pay by credit card, debit card, e-check, you know, like all that good stuff.
I just had a thought. Hopefully they wouldn't try emailing a credit card number or something.
No, I hope not. I hope not.
What does it look like, I guess, for their email? Does it infer that they have to do something like that or?
You know, I honestly haven't looked.
Okay.
Just
says you got a bill.
But I'm assuming, I mean, what you're assuming is that you're all business people and you're smarter than that, right?
I don't know.
If you're worried about this customer, then you need to print off an invoice and send it to him through the snail mail and not email
it. And you can do that through, you just print it off from here. You can
it makes PDFs, everything. Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have witnessed firsthand people emailing credit cards. Just for our listeners, emails like sending a postcard. People can see what it is as it's going through the pipes.
Yep. Disgusting. I can't. That's so frustrating that people do that.
Careful with that. Questions about that. Does it do tax integration stuff?
Not that I know.
Not that I know.
Okay. You know, but then again, I mean, if you're looking for fine-grained stuff like that, perhaps you should pay for a software suite, right? I mean, this is like...
I guess it could total... It probably does a report, like, give me all the bills for this year. That could
help. I'm sure. I mean, that's better than nothing, right? It's not going to file it and send it off for you in the mail. But it was great for, like, me because I did some independent contracting for a guy here in town, and... You know, he was like, well, why, you know, I was like, oh, I have to invoice you, huh? And he's like, yeah, I mean, just open up Word and get an invoice template, which works, right? But I was like, no, like this does it for me. And as an independent contractor, you can get pretty busy and have a lot of accounts. It'll keep track of what invoices they've paid and stuff. I mean, it seemed pretty trivial for one invoice that I might have this year for a little bit. But if you have more than one client... It's nice to keep track of that stuff for you.
Can it do automatic or rotating bills? That'd be cool.
That would be cool. I don't think it does.
Like if you maintain a website for somebody and, you know, every month you charge them a small fee or something, maybe you could automatically send a bill to them.
That would be pretty cool. I'm not sure if it does that.
Could you maybe use it for rentals or some kind of a... You know, where it's an automatic every certain.
Well, I mean, imagine if you were a property manager, you sign up for Billing Boss and pay a little bit of money for their payment processing. Wouldn't you love to? I mean, well, you don't pay rent because you own a house, but like, I really wish I could pay my rent online.
Uh-huh.
That would be so awesome. I mean, I don't know how many people I know who have.
Well, that would make it easier if it was an automatic thing. They don't have to send. I guess rent though is it's inferred that it's automatic.
Yeah,
you're going to be sending it in every month anyways. Mm-hmm. The next thing I was thinking about is when you said, I accidentally heard you say mail, sending mail. Maybe they could offer a premium service where they actually do mailing. I know like Wells Fargo sends out, you can pay your bills.
Yeah.
And they'll send out the check for you.
Maybe if you sign for the premium service, they do that. I mean, that's something.
No, I mean, maybe they could make it. I don't see a premium service, but maybe... they either have that or they maybe could add that.
Mm-hmm. They do have reports. You can export as like CVSs or print as well. Like I see my one little invoice here right now. It's pretty cool, right? I can share it with you. That's pretty cool. I can invite like a bookkeeper or an accountant to log into my invoicing system. That's pretty awesome. So let me like, if I create a new invoice, let's take a look at this. What we got here? Issue date, due date, customer. No, you can't do recurring. But you can give discounts. I gave a discount. I give a free security audit.
Nice.
But anyway, I mean, if you're anything sizable, I would not recommend using something like Billing Boss. But especially for like small independent contractors, I think, you know, or just small businesses, I think it's the way to go. Right?
That's cool.
Yeah. I like it. I liked it because I didn't have to use some cheesy Microsoft template that everybody would notice and think I'm a D-bag for using. But I would recommend everybody using Building Boss. But all right, Mark, our time's up. So what would you say is the takeaway message of our recording today?
I know for me, it's I need to try out some more of these services because I'm a little bit resistant to that.
So. Yeah, and make sure if you do that you cancel them if you decide not to use them.
Yeah, or I guess if you want to try something for risk free, definitely check out the PayPal virtual credit cards. Mm-hmm.
And help your grandmother switch through the digital transition because grandmother or brother, right?
Uh huh.
Because that's confusing.
So,
all right, I'm Jade Robbins, and this is Mark Sanborn. Thank you for listening to Face Off.